fall in Syracuse means the start of sweater weather, changing foliage, and football.
Joe, my man, we really got to get you out of the house a little more. It's also the start of theater season, and we're going to chat about that on this edition of the 315. On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org. Welcome to the 315. I'm Kevin Kloss.
And I'm Joe Lee. Kevin's right. Fall starts the theater season, and for Syracuse Stage, it means the start of a brand new season that celebrates diverse and powerful voices.
Joining us to discuss the season is Bob Hupp, Artistic Director at Syracuse Stage, as well as Associate Artistic Director Kyle Bass. Kyle, Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks.
So right out of the gate, let's just talk a little bit about the theme for this coming year. Voices live in light. Talk a little bit about where that came from and how that sort of speaks to the selection of shows that we're about to discuss.
Well, I'll jump in on that. Kyle and I have had several conversations about that. So the original conversation started with a conversation about the Washington Post and their sort of slogan about democracy dies in darkness. And so we were talking about how do you flip that into a positive statement. And we were looking at the work we were doing, particularly as we kick off with the titles that we're kicking off the season with. And throughout the course of the season, we really identified new voices, voices that perhaps we don't hear in other contexts, voices that we hear perhaps in new ways. And so these were the things that were linking the plays that were under consideration for our 47th season. And that's where this concept of voices came from.
And we start the season with 12 Angry Men. Now, going back to the classic film, it's actually one of my favorite Henry Fonda films. Will your story be... First, let's talk a little bit about 12 Angry Men for those that aren't familiar, but will your story be contemporary or will it be more of a period piece?
Well, right now, the plan of attack for 12 Angry Men is that really it will be set in the era in which it was written. It was written in 1954. Mm-hmm. And so the plan is that that's where the story will emerge from. And it is, you know, that story, that powerful courtroom, jury room, experience where, in this case, men have gathered to debate the fate of a voice we never hear, a young man that we learn about him through the definition of others. And so we think, you know, yes, it was written in 54, but when Kyle and I were talking about it and the opportunity presented itself to include it in our season, it really is. It's a play that Syracuse Stage has never done before, as far as I know.
Yeah, I've been here for 30 years. I've never seen it presented here.
We had one of that American classic, sort of mid-century classic play in our season.
Yeah. And it just seemed right. You know, Bob and I had a long conversation about why this play, why now? And I think the times really make it really pertinent and exciting and potentially explosive. So it's just good drama. Mm-hmm. And it's also a good piece of theater.
Yeah, it is. It lends itself to theater because it pretty much takes place in that jury deliberation room.
That's right.
Almost
mm-hmm.
entirely. And it's one of those things I take with me whenever I go do jury duty. It's like if I wonder if I have what it takes, what Henry Fonda had to turn around 11 other people to sort of his way of thinking. Well, not really his way of thinking, but the way that he saw the truth. And so we're talking about, and we're not going to spoil anything. We're talking about the fact that a young man, young black man, is accused of murder. And you, Kevin, you've probably been in jury duty. You know there's folks in there that are itching to get out, mm-hmm. you know, so they want to make a quick decision. Henry Fonda's character, the main character, does not see things the way that the rest of the jurors see. And he spends almost the entire movie really hashing this out and getting people to understand a different point of view and a different way of looking at this case. Am I describing that accurately?
You are.
You are. And it's really a metaphor, I think, for our times. I mean, there are very quick snaps to judgment. We are living in very tense and contentious times, and so the microcosm of this jury room, although this story is written in 1954, speaks very vividly to our our now.
And then we move from 12 Angry Men to Beauty and the Beast. And
quite a switch.
It's true. But for people sort of in what I'll call my generation, mid to early 30s, we grew up on this Disney version of Beauty and the Beast. And then a few years ago, we saw the live action reboot. Is there a balance that kind of goes on for you guys between which of those interpretations you're going to see yours influenced by?
Well, you know, it's pretty pretty scripted. And I don't mean that. I mean that literally. In other words, you know, Disney licensed Disney's Beauty and the Beast. And our production will follow the Broadway production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. That's the script that is available to us to license, and that's the script we'll be producing. And it is all the magic of Beauty and the Beast, the animated, you know, how many versions are there now? There's the animated version. Mm-hmm. There's the Broadway version. There's the live action version. And by and large, they're all connected through the same story, the same music. And so, you know, the holiday slot is the most popular slot in our season. We did Elf the musical in the season we're in right now, and 25,000 people came down to see Elf the musical across its 6 weeks. And so we really looked at that holiday slot to be a time when families, kids, moms, dads, aunts, uncles, grandmas, grandpas can come down and celebrate the holidays and make Syracuse Stage a part of their holiday celebration.
I would imagine more so than any of the other plays in the lineup that this would be the one that the costuming staff and staging staff's really itching to sink their teeth into. I mean, this opens up all kinds of costume creation and staging.
And in fact, even today, as before we came down here, a lot of our conversation in the on the production side is about how will we execute the costumes for Beauty and the Beast? How will the set design evolve? We, you know, announced the season just last week. So where we are now is we're lining up all of the designers who will collaborate to create these worlds. And our primary focus right now, even though we're, you know, quite a ways out, is how will we execute Beauty and the Beast? We have an amazing resident creative team. But of course, our creative team is creating work for Syracuse Stage and for Syracuse Drama.
Right.
So we're always coordinating and negotiating how we serve both the drama program, which is fantastic, and the Syracuse Stage season.
Now, do you have license to get really creative with a Disney property like that, or is that scripted as well in terms of the costuming and set design?
You know, Disney does control their product more than other producers might control their work. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. And so while we might take wonderful and risky experimental opportunities in other productions, not so much with Disney's Beauty and the Beast. It will be, you know, in terms of the visuals, it will be what audiences have come to expect from that world.
You know, when I think about the theme as you described it, really lending a voice to people who don't have a voice, that to me fits best, for me anyway, in the next one, which is The Wolves. When I see the title, I think it's something that's highly dangerous, something that's maybe a little risky, and in actuality, it's a high school girl soccer team. What is it about this story that was intriguing for you guys?
Well, it's funny you say, you know, you hear that title and it feels dangerous and it's risky, and in fact it is, because what we are seeing and we are witness to are young girls on their way to womanhood who, you know, we are able to overhear their conversations when there are adults in the room and what they actually talk about, right? The real stuff and the real way in which they talk about their lives, their experiences. So it's really exciting. It's a new play, one of the most heralded plays, one of the new plays really to come across in a few years. A young playwright, Sarah DeLapp, is amazingly talented, and she captures the sense of these young women in a very, very powerful way.
What's the central conflict in this?
It's interesting construction about the Wolves, because it is these young women who are on a practice field practicing for a soccer game. They are active the entire time. We never see them anywhere but the field. The audience actor relationship is like that if you were going to go to a soccer match. And so, you know, in terms of, you know, traditional structure, this play deviates from traditional structure in terms of its, you know, the dramatic climax, for instance. It is an ongoing, slow rising tension that is created by this chorus of voices, each of these young women who are identified in the script only by the number on their uniform. We never actually hear their name, but yet we come to understand their distinct identities through the course of this play. And so where the conflict really exists, I think, is in the evolution of the individual characters and how they relate to one another. It's unlike any play that I've seen in modern theater, particularly in New York theater. I saw the play initially in Washington, D.C. It's being done all over the country. It's one of the most popular plays in the country right now because it is such a unique play, but yet also, I think, because we can relate to their world, we really see their insight, their challenges, their frustrations, their fears in a distinctly unique way in this play.
We should mention that, as you mentioned, it's critically acclaimed and it was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize.
That's right.
In drama. So and, high expectations
right.
for that one.
And let me say something else about that, too. And just like with Disney's Beauty and the Beast, The Wolves is a co-production with University's Department of Drama.
Okay. You know,
we have a wonderful relationship with the Department of Drama. And here's a play where the characters are teenage young women. How perfect when we have so many excellent young actors right there in our building. Mm-hmm. This was a perfect collaboration, I think, with the Department of Drama and one that I think really sets up that excellence in acting that audiences have come to expect from a production at Syracuse Stage.
That's going to be fantastic. We move from The Wolves to Amadeus, which is it's really about the mythology of Mozart's death more so than about Mozart himself. It was a very popular play, movie that was most folks are familiar with. How's the stage performance production differ from the movie?
Well, in fact, it began first as a play, and then it was made into a film. So one of the things that we're able to do is, you know, bring the audience with more intimacy, obviously, than happens in the cinema. So that's very, very exciting. When this title came up and we were talking about it, one of the things we were looking at was like, how do we cast this show? How do we cast this show to do something exciting? This is the only show in the season that is a show that we have produced in the past. Mm-hmm. So we are bringing it forward. It's been about 18 years mm-hmm. or so. It's been mm-hmm. a good while. But I think the key is that it's a fabulous play. Because it is at heart a mystery,
yeah.
right? And so it's really kind of great. And Bob can talk about our exciting casting. Can we talk about that?
Well, sure. Yeah, of course we can. And, you know, we'd been trying to get the rights to Amadeus for 2 years. This is a play that we have been talking about for over 24 months. We thought, I am very interested in the play personally as a director. It's a project that I had never directed before, so it was something that was on my mind. And the rights were tied up for a lot of reasons. Rights freed up just in the fall, this past fall, for productions in 2019, 2020. And really, when we were talking about Amadeus, from the get-go, we had an actor in mind to play the title role that excited me even more about this production. That actor is Mickey Rowe. Mickey was here in Syracuse last year when we did The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. He played the lead role in that production. And his work really captivated us. In fact, captivated all of our audience. He really was riveting in that performance. And we thought then, but boy, if we were going to bring Mickey back, what would be a great role for him? And almost immediately, playing Mozart in Amadeus was that role. And so as soon as we got the rights, as soon as we nailed it down, I reached out to Mickey. I asked him if he was interested in auditioning. He's a Seattle-based actor. He said he was interested in auditioning. He submitted a video. It was fantastic. And so we were off to the races. And that's a very exciting aspect of our production, as is our partnership with Symphoria.
Okay.
On a lot of auxiliary events, music events that will happen in our building. We're very excited to have...
Around Amadeus?
Correct.
Oh, that's great.
Very excited to have Symphoria as a creative partner on this production.
And Kyle, I know you referenced the play that the movie was based off of. I know in that early play, they incorporate a lot of Mozart's music into the production. Is that something you guys are planning on including as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's central to the play. It's the music. It's the music of Mozart that haunts and disturbs Salieri, our lead character. And again, like you were saying, Julie, that it's Mozart's in the play. It's called Amadeus, but he's you know, it's not his play. Mm-hmm. It is about him, but it is not his play.
Yeah, Salieri is that's the interesting character. So who do we know who's playing?
Not yet.
Okay.
We'll have auditions in New York City in the fall for that role. So, no, of course, whenever you pick a play that has a role that is that juicy,
yeah,
you have some ideas. Mm-hmm. But we're going to go through an audition process to find the best actor for that role.
Was it really a mystery? It's still a mystery? We don't know how he...
I think there's lots of questions about how he met his demise. Yeah. It wasn't a happy life.
Which really makes this an interesting play. Yeah. It really does.
Myth always swirls around.
Yeah. We go from Amadeus to what is perhaps in my top five all-time favorite movies, which was Once. Now, did Once start as a movie or did that start as a play as well?
Once started as a movie.
Right. And it is
based on Once is based on.
It is. I can't wait to see that. I really can't. I did not get a chance to get down to Broadway to see it. But if you are not familiar with the movie, it stars singer-songwriter Glenn Hansard along with Markita Irglova, two struggling musicians trying to trying to get a big break, but it's really more than that. It's more than musicians trying to get a break. It's musicians trying to break beyond their self-imposed limitations. It's about family. It's about trust. And the music is just fantastic. And I believe most of the music was written by Glenn Hansard, right?
Yes. And
the frames.
The riveting part of Once, yes, that story is so compelling. But the fact that this is a production where the performers are also musicians.
Right.
So all of the performers on stage are also performing. They're playing, they're singing, there's the dance and the music are all created by the performers on stage. And to me, that was what was so riveting about – I mean, I love the music. Oh, my gosh. And I really love the way it's constructed, the way it's arranged. But just the sort of energy of those performers playing those instruments on stage is something that makes Once particularly powerful for me.
And will this take place in Ireland? And will the performers be Irish?
Well, I suspect they will be American. I don't know if they will have Irish heritage. But the setting of the play and all that is still being discussed.
Okay. So there could be a...
Well, you know, sometimes you can – there are – where you set a play sometimes is controlled by who's producing the play, by who the rights holders are, and what's been done in the past. You know, the Broadway production folks don't want you to just imitate what they created. And so we have to examine the world that we'll create. We're partnering on this production with the Jiva Theater in Rochester. It will originate there and come to Syracuse. So obviously our partners in Rochester will have a big say in how the production evolves as well.
Okay. I love movies and plays that really hone in on the creative process, and you just watch these folks create just fantastic music. And the soundtrack was, I think, won an Oscar. Won a Grammy, if I'm not mistaken, but the soundtrack is phenomenal. A lot of the music came from Glenn Hansard's performances from his band, the Frames, as well as some of his solo work. But it's one that I'm really – that's the one I got circled most. Kevin wants to go see Beauty and the Beast. I want to see Once.
I'd like to keep the wife happy, so that's the one we're going to. We've talked about most of the shows sort of in your subscription season, but the last one, to me, feels like a shift. Everything so far has felt a little weighty, very serious in tone. This next one is a little bit of a comedy, Yoga Play. I know as much about this show as I know about yoga in general, which is nothing. So what can you tell me about Yoga Play?
So Yoga Play, I was kind of kicking around, we're always trying to, include, comedy in our season. And so I came across Yoga Play and I read it and I was laughing out loud. And Bob will say that that's not an easy thing to get Kyle Bass to do. But
I try all the time. Rarely works.
But I thought it was really smart. And then I immediately thought, this feels like Bob, right? This, I've been hanging around this guy a couple of years now. I know his sense of humor. I know his serious side as well, but he has a very broad palette for the theater. And so I was, you know, running, said, Bob, you got to read this. And Bob read it.
Talk about the premise a little bit, because it's pretty – the premise itself is hilarious.
The premise is funny. It's the story of a high-end yoga apparel company, which you, perhaps that brings to mind certain other companies, and a new CEO who is a woman. It's the first time a woman has been in charge of this company, taking it over from the founders. She's going to launch a big new brand of lavender-scented yoga pants. that are very expensive. And just as the launch is about to roll out, it's discovered that these high-end pants, are being made by children in less than ideal conditions in India. And so now they have a crisis.
A PR crisis.
They have a PR crisis. And how they deal with that PR crisis is where the humor comes in. It is a play about authenticity, about whose voice is really the voice that can speak for this, you know, industry. This is a huge industry. Every day there's new conversations about the role that yoga plays in our lives. But there's also the idea of, you know, who owns this movement. And so the play is very funny. But it also, at its core, also pokes at something that we think is, worth a conversation. I was so delighted when Kyle brought it to my attention. I was unfamiliar with the play, and as soon as I read it, I agreed with Kyle that it was a play that I thought our audiences would enjoy.
I want to go behind the curtain just for 1 second on something that you said, Kyle. You said that you read the script for this and you knew that Bob needed to see it. When you guys are deciding what goes into the season, how much is that sort of typical for you guys, where one of you will read a script and say the other guy needs to read this? Are you guys in on things together? What's the process for even just getting a large group of shows before you have to pare it down?
I feel like it's ongoing, actually. You know, Bob sees a lot of plays. I see a lot of plays. I read a lot of plays. I think what works well with the two of us is that, you know, Bob is a director, I'm a playwright, and so there's both these mindsets are in the room. Bob will receive plays, that he has requested. Other directors will send plays. He'll ask me to read them. I comment, I find stuff, I ask, I give it to him, he reads it. And it's through some alchemy somehow, we get down from a great big pile of cards that we have white cards, these 3x5 cards that we use and write titles on, keep them on the board and move them around. It's not just the titles. It's also how do these titles production-wise fit into our calendar. There are all kinds of things we have to weigh in terms of picking a season. But it is a conversation, and then others come into that conversation, and then we end up with a season.
Kyle and I brainstorm almost every week. All year long about plays we want to do. But then, of course, once we come up with what we think is an amazing list, it then also has to be vetted through Jill Anderson, our managing director, who has to look at and Don Bushman, our director of production operations, to see if these plays are affordable, if they can bring in a collection of six plays, do they generate collectively the income that needs to be generated to keep us solvent? Are they cost effective? We are limited to how many beds we have in terms of how many actors we can bring in at any given time. Mm-hmm. So there are so many practical considerations. Are the rights available, et cetera, that also color our conversation, which is why our conversation has to be ongoing and has to involve so many of the key players at stage. And, of course, at the end of the day, our board of trustees approves our budget. So by approving our budget, they are endorsing the slate of plays that Kyle and I have put forward.
Is there a micro mission to the mission? Do you? I feel like for years that Syracuse Stage has made an effort to introduce people to new work. Is that a part of the mission? Do you collectively talk about getting to a place where you are? Maybe you have something out there that you know is going to hammer home the ticket sales, but you want to choose something that introduces audiences to new work and new ideas.
Yes, but I don't know that it's a micro mission. It's part of our mission.
Okay.
No, you know, it's new plays. Without new plays in the theater, theater dies. It becomes a museum.
Yeah.
And so we're both very interested in that. We're always looking for something new. And it's been great because our audiences have really accepted and look forward to this work. And we've done the work to prepare them and to excite them about new work. So it's right there. It's central to our mission.
And now you're going into the second year with a new component of the season, which is the cold read things that you do. Mm-hmm. And we noticed that you have Taye Diggs coming in for a play that he's written or
actually,
is producing.
He's directing.
Directing. Okay.
Kenan Scott II wrote a new play called Thoughts of a Colored Man that has been in workshop for the last couple of years. In fact, you know, Kyle and I both have gone to workshop productions of it in Washington, D.C. and New York City. And so it's under the Cold Read banner, as is all new things that we're producing at Syracuse Stage. It's going to, in fact, open our season in September. We were excited, very excited that Taye Diggs was attached to this project. It's what's called an enhanced project. That means that it has a commercial producer attached to it. So it will produce here in Syracuse and another regional theater, and then the opportunity exists for it to move into New York City if that's the path it wants to take. But Taye Diggs has connection as an mm-hmm. alum of Syracuse University and the Department of Drama that there was a special connection there. And so we're particularly thrilled to kick off the whole season with this brand new play.
Now, is a cold read not a fully produced? So, what's a cold read?
Sure. So
let's go that
there
route.
You go, there you go. So, cold read is a festival of new plays, and it's a play reading festival. I was really interested in finding space to make the playwright and the playwriting process central as part of our conversation, and so dreamed up this week-long event, which has 4 days of public events. And I curate the event and bring in a playwright in residence for the festival, a solo artist, directors, a company of actors who are all busy working on new work and presenting that new work to audience in public performances and presentations. So that's really the beginning, I hope, for what will grow perhaps as we move on to, you know, commissioning new work, right? And then always with an eye toward embracing new work in the season, however we can get it in.
How was it received in the first season?
Last year was great. It was really, really, really exciting. And as I said, we just closed on Sunday this year's Cold Read. And I have to say that I felt like in any good endeavor, it took a nice step forward as an event. It's feeling very much institutionalized. Audiences were very responsive to the work. We had Larissa Fasthorse, one of the hottest playwrights right now. She was the playwright in residence. Margaret Gomez came from the West Coast, years of doing stand-up, and did a beautiful, beautiful early draft, really, of a very personal work for her, something she would not have tackled had she not had this opportunity. So it's really great to be able to offer this space for these artists to come and work. We also featured a local playwright in a new event this year called Right Here. That's WRITE, Right Here. And when we featured the play by Tanner Effinger, and that was exciting to be in conversation with local artists in that way. So Bob directed that piece, and it was lovely to hear. And the support that that folks brought into the theater, I found very inspiring.
But of course, with Thoughts of a Colored Man, that's a fully realized production. And so,
okay.
So we put it under the Cold Read banner because it is a work that is being developed, that it is new work. But in the same way that Kyle's play last year, Possessing Harriet, still had that sort of Cold Read tag on it because we want to identify new work.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way of immediately looking at anything you see at Syracuse Stage, seeing that Cold Read logo there, you know, that's new work. But Thoughts of a Colored Man, unlike the Cold Read Festival that happens in this time of year, the Thoughts of a Colored Man is a fully realized production. Oh. It just happens to be a world premiere.
I'm looking yeah, forward to that.
And that's right. So there are the components are Cold Read are the festival, then there are Cold Read events, the Cold Read projects, right? It's a branding.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And that is not part of a subscription package. Is that true?
That's correct. Thoughts of a Colored Man is something that people can, and when they're subscribing to Syracuse Stage, they can add that at a discounted rate to their six-play subscription.
Okay, so let's talk about the subscription package for a second. Six plays, dollar figure-wise, what are we looking at for someone who's interested in maybe getting a package for Syracuse Stage?
Well, you know, subscriptions start at $198 for six plays. It's really a great way to carve out six date nights or six ways of exploring new work or six ways of just really engaging with your family where you're coming together and you have those dates set aside. And so those six productions of our subscription season begin with 12 Angry Men and then continue through yoga play. So we add Thoughts of a Colored Man onto the beginning of this season. This year it will be in September, right after Labor Day. And so, you know, for a modest price, you can add that. Or you can just, you know, you can come to any play. You don't have to buy a subscription to see any play in our season. Or you can buy a smaller subscription, maybe just three plays that you pick out and you want to see. Or we pick for you and you come and see just three plays in the course of a season. But our objective through all of this is to make sure that Syracuse Stage is accessible to everyone, that everybody knows that Syracuse Stage is for them. And so we really want to encourage, through the plays we're selecting, everybody to come down and make Syracuse Stage a part of your life.
Bob Hupp, Kyle Bass, I want to thank you guys for coming in and chatting with us about Syracuse Stage 2019-2020 season.
Great, thank you.
Our pleasure, thank you.
Joe, we spent roughly 30 minutes with Kyle and Bob talking about the next season of plays coming to Syracuse Stage. So what show did they talk about that piqued your interest that maybe you weren't thinking about before?
Well, like I said, I had once circled on the calendar, but I think I'm really interested in seeing yoga play. It sounds hilarious. I mean, after a season of what feels like a high drama, mm-hmm. That one brings a bit of levity, and it sounds like a very interesting premise.
Yeah, with the whole PR nightmare and workplace comedy. Yeah, no, I think that sounds like a great show.
I shop at Lululemon, so it'll be interesting to draw some parallels. What about yourself?
You know, for me, I had actually looked at Beauty and the Beast as something we had talked about and The Wolves, but I think Amadeus, just hearing them talk about it and you interacting with them a little bit, it just sounds like this story just drenched in rivalry and competition that ultimately goes way too far. And I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the movie or the play, but I just think the tension in that show is going to be through the roof.
It is, and when you're done seeing the play, definitely watch the movie. I don't know if it would spoil you to watch the movie first, but certainly after seeing the play, watch the movie because it was very good.
And a reminder, you can find information about packages, pricing, and all the plays that we mentioned today at syracusestage.org.
And when you're done there, why not click over to waer.org, where you can find past episodes of the 315.
And we'd love to see you all on our Facebook page, too. Like the page to get updates on new episodes, and tell us if there's something happening in your town we should know about. Until next time, I'm Kevin Kloss.
And I'm Joe Lee. Thanks for listening.
And so, if you ever want something in your car, and I'll come running to fight, and I'll be at your door.